Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guests today are John Bridgeland and Bruce Reed from Results for America, and they're here to discuss today the Federal Invest in What Works Index. I'd like to explore the key federal agencies and departments' efforts to build evidence. And what I mean by that is perhaps you could highlight the progress made within key agencies in establishing a core leadership infrastructure to facilitate the use of evidence in informing policy decision making. Bruce?
So the Labor Department has the Chief Evaluation Office. Labor's a real leader on all this. They set aside 1% of funding to do research and evaluation. The Education Department has an evaluation planning group. As I mentioned earlier, the Education Department is also quite a leader, has done much over the last few years to push evidence at the state and local level as well.
John?
I would add that the there are wonderful examples. The Corporation for National and Community Service that was seated in the Bush 1 administration really created and ramped up in the Clinton administration and then further ramped up in the Bush 2 administration. So it's been a bipartisan effort. It gives you 27 out of 100 points for the applicants to state and national grants. So programs like CityEar and Teach for America and Habitat for Humanity and Youth Build that are familiar to many Americans and mobilize young people in a year of national service to their country to help tackle tough challenges in local communities. If you have evidence, if you have a theory of change that's supported by literature and research, you get a chunk of points. Mm-hmm. If you actually have direct evidence, evaluation of your program, like programs like Teach for America and CityEar have, that show that they're in the dropout factory high schools and their feeder schools, they're tutoring and mentoring those students who are off track. And their programs, mentoring and tutoring, consistent with the evidence, are actually boosting the outcomes and trajectories of those young people. The corporation is basically embedding in its review and then grant making a real commitment to evidence. As Bruce mentioned too, this reauthorization of the No Child Left Behind Act, we wrote a piece on it. It is littered with evidence-based. I'll just give you one example. There were about 2,000 dropout factory high schools where 50% of high school dropouts were leaving school, just 15% of the schools. And over the last decade, we've reduced that number to about 1,000. And it's because there's been, rigor in following evidence by those who've been making these reforms in school districts and in partnership with community-based organizations and states. And so the federal government stepped up and said under Title I, up to 7% of the funds can be spent on these plans to reform low-performing schools, but you've got to follow the evidence. That was a big deal and a big signal that, government was going to be on the side of those who have proof.
So the next thing we wanted to talk about is the policies and plans and research and learning agenda that are happening at the departments and agency levels. Would you give us a sense of what evaluation plans, policies, research agendas, what do they contain? And perhaps more importantly, you could highlight some of the key successes in this area as outlined in the What Works Index.
I'll give you one that was interesting. In 2002, we worked with the U.S. Department of Education to create the What Works Clearinghouse and engage Mathematica, which is a very rigorous evaluation firm, to create the Common Evidence Framework and to eventually review the programs funded by the Department of Education and then post their results online. Very objectively, both the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we joked early on it was the Nothing Works Clearinghouse. there wasn't anything to post. But over time, the good news was, consistent with rigor, the department increasingly started to fund things that did have evidence and did have outcomes. And it wasn't just a signal to government and what it should fund. It was actually a signal to nonprofits, to schools, to lots of stakeholders, business. You look at social impact bonds and the emergence of private investors wanting to step up and ensure government only pays for success. And then they in turn could get a return on a good investment in a program that has evidence. You saw the market start to move in the direction toward more highly effective dropout prevention and recovery programs. And it's not a surprise to me that in the last decade there have been an 11 percentage point gain in high school graduation rates after 30 years of flatlining, and 2 million more students have graduated from high school rather than dropping out. Mm-hmm. because I think there's been a flow, you know, toward an evidence-based culture.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Government can play a great signaling role. You know, everyone out there in all walks of life is looking for trusted information that they can count on. And if you're running a school or you're running a program at the local level and you want to try something new, you want to know what's worked somewhere else. We've often had trouble convincing people at the local level that they should try something else. But when they want to, it's good for them to have a shopping list so that they learn from other people's mistakes. And a number of agencies have done that really well. It's not just gathering the information. It's releasing it, making it easily available to the public. The Administration for Children and Families at HHS does an excellent job of this. It's sharing with the world those who are looking at it from 30,000 feet and are seeing the whole playing field have seen to work or not work.
So, John, many federal agencies are using What Works exchanges and repositories to communicate the results of their evidence efforts. Would you elaborate on how these agencies are publicly releasing the findings of completed evaluations?
You know, we don't know enough yet, but one of the when this index was upgraded, you know, it started in 2013. It's going to be released for 2016 in all its glory, you know, with these seven departments and agencies who have stepped up and are doing the right thing. And so once you actually are learning from the data you're collecting and reporting, the Department of Education is a fabulous example where they're collecting data now. Common calculation of graduation rates, their Office of Civil Rights, you know, attendance patterns, teacher absenteeism, suspension and expulsion policies, disaggregated data by race, ethnicity, income, and homelessness. I mean, it's fascinating. It opens up all sorts of vistas and windows into like what's going on in these school districts. And so the ability to share not only with other departments and agencies, across programs within a department and agency, but at the state and local levels, what you're learning from this data. Imagine, you know, collecting these data sets and then sharing that with Shelbyville High School in Shelbyville, Indiana, which was the poster school for Dropout Nation, right? Yeah. And having an interactive dialogue about how data can be the great, you know, driver of every child succeeding. You know, that's a powerful, but we don't know yet because the index prompted all this insight and input from the agencies, but we're collecting that and massaging that and trying to sort through it.
So I wanted to switch to, would you elaborate on the extent to which federal agencies have invested program funds in evaluation? Perhaps you could highlight programs that have conducted, say, impact studies, implementation studies, or, you know, evaluation, technical assistance kind of things.
I'll give you one example that was so, you know, Bruce in his glory days in the Clinton administration, they had this New Markets Initiative, and one of the outgrowths of it, he'll remember these youth opportunity grants that identified in 36 cities, suburbs, and rural communities and tribal lands. These young people were disconnected from school and work and cost, we now know, cost taxpayers every year $93 billion a year if we don't reconnect them.
Wow.
So, it, you know, even if you're, you know, you're not compelled by the moral case, the economic case is overwhelming. And this is sort of a Bruce's colleague Gene Sperling in this book, Moneyball for Government, signaled the dangers of the on-off switch. Mm-hmm. And if the view that if you don't have evidence, you have to eliminate a program. So basically, the Youth Opportunity Grant Program didn't have an evaluation in place.
I see.
And the Congress for that ended up actually eliminating funding for the program. And then a few years later, when I was there in the Bush administration, an evaluation came out in partnership with the Department of Labor showing that the Youth Opportunity Grants had actually been extremely successful at reconnecting disconnected youth to school and employment. And it shows you the dangers of saying, well, because you don't have evidence, we're just going to eliminate funding. So my point is it's got to be create an environment of curiosity and continuous improvement and building an evidence base so we can make smart investments and make choices, but not just eliminate programs that we don't know enough about.
And Bridge raises an important point, which is government's a big grant maker. It's investing in a lot of efforts around the country. It's not that the that everyone in Washington is actually running all these things, but they're taking a chance on new ideas around the country. And the index puts a premium on making sure that agencies, for their big competitive grants and their non-competitive grants as well, that they build research and evaluation into it. And that's a great thing. That's a revolution that has happened in philanthropy as well, that instead of just signaling good intentions and hoping that things worked out, you actually track for results. And I think that is doing a huge service to the people who at the front lines who are doing the innovating as well. It's so much easier, as anyone who's worked in the private sector or the public sector knows, if you have a clear outcome, a clear standard that you're working toward, if you know you're going to be held what you're going to be held accountable for, so that you're not just spending all your time trying to avoid making mistakes, avoid public embarrassment. You're actually trying to achieve a social good, and you're not just trying to justify your existence by things that don't actually matter to the result.
So, whenever I have this conversation around evidence, folks talk about performance management as a way to capture that data that we're talking about. And all too often, I notice that the performance management and program evaluation are considered separate, almost distinct tools. So how important, gentlemen, is it to bridge that divide so you can take advantage of the synergy between the two efforts? And more importantly, based on the What Works Index, how are specific agencies working to better integrate evaluation and performance measurement?
I think it's absolutely critical. I mean, there are hundreds of reports sitting on shelves of government, nonprofit, and private sector offices. But if, Bruce made the point earlier, is if you need a clear goal,
yeah,
clear priorities, you need actually a strategy to reach those priorities. You may need to make sure your strategy and your plan are driven by evidence of what works, and then have a real commitment to being open-minded about, even where you've made large investments in the past and be willing to say, that wasn't right, or we've learned so much more now, let's adjust. And then have a commitment to, accountability for results, transparency and reporting. And I think the Department of Housing and Urban Development with this HUDSTAT model, mm-hmm, shows a commitment to, regular performance reviews around, their priorities. And other agencies, the Department of Labor, Department of Education, it's had a focus on, improving the lowest performing schools, boosting high school graduation rates. It now has a college scorecard so young people can see the relationship between, tracks they've taken in high school and what their opportunities could be beyond and post-secondary, not just four-year but also two-year institutions. As we look to educate more young people to get the jobs of the future, as the whole equation has shifted from you only needed a high school diploma for 75% of the jobs a generation ago, mm-hmm, and today it's completely flipped. You need at least high school and at least some college, and so the departments are showing a commitment to performance reviews and upping their game with respect to programs that have real impacts on people, like these young people who are trying to get educated and find a job.
Yeah, HUDSTAT is a great program, and that whole range of programs is built on a couple decades of great work that started in New York City with a program that transformed the police department, transformed crime fighting by simply measuring how well police were doing in keeping places safe. And it showed leaders across the country that if you gave even a huge bureaucracy a clear goal and met with managers regularly to see how they were progressing towards that goal, as long as you got the goal right and as long as you kept track, you could make strides that no one imagined possible.
That's a great transition to sort of the index highlights federal agencies' efforts to collect, analyze, and share the use of high-quality administrative and survey data to improve programs. So would you elaborate on the key progress that's happened as evidenced by the 2016 index in the area of data sharing, documentation, data standards?
So one area where I think we've seen an explosive and really hopeful growth in the sharing of data is actually in education. Let me give you an example there. The evidence out of Chicago and Johns Hopkins showed that early warning systems that tracked a young person's attendance, behavior, and course performance in reading and math were far more predictive of whether that student would drop out than test scores. The Department of Education made a real commitment to sharing that information, holding conferences, summits in partnership with research institutions on how schools and districts could, you know, ramp up their early warning systems. It's recent at the White House, there was announced a chronic absenteeism campaign. Okay. And so that commitment to research data and evidence, and then actually getting, this gets to performance review and, you know, what actually happens with this good data and evidence. These school districts were brought along, and now, you know, large numbers of them, particularly the low performing schools, have the data and the capacity, and then aligning with interventions, community-based supports, and school-based supports to get the kids the support they need as these alarms are signaled.
I know we talked about it briefly before, but I just wanted to say, do you gentlemen have anything else to add around user-friendly tools that federal agencies are using or employing to disseminate and promote the use of evidence-based interventions, sort of get folks on board? Are there any particular tools out there, maybe the What Works clearinghouses or something?
Yeah, it's interesting. The What Works clearinghouses are really, in some cases, maybe more useful to stakeholders on the outside. I've also noticed, you know, in the national service space, Corporation for National Community Service has been increasingly, they have a whole research division, which is pretty important because the civic life of our country, you look at, you know, how the country, the levels of social trust today, how we're tearing ourselves apart in communities across the country. And, you know, having organizations that committed to actually figuring out how we can knit the country together, people of different races, ethnicities, income levels coming together to serve and solve problems. But what they've done is, like the Minnesota Reading Corps had a randomized controlled trial. It showed it was highly effective in boosting literacy rates. It's been publicizing and through user-friendly tools through the web and a lot of these modern internet tools I don't even fully understand. It's been getting the word out so that other communities and other grantees, as they're applying in to get support from the corporation, can see programs like the Minnesota Reading Corps or City Year or Teach for America, or then ones you've never, maybe like Earth Conservation Corps, you've never heard of, but that have good outcomes and have a theory of change that's grounded in evidence. And the good news is the corporation actually awards you points for doing that. So they've been very appropriately aggressive in getting the word out on what's been successful.
How can federal agencies increase their evaluation capacity? We will ask John Bridgeland and Bruce Reed from Results for America when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.